Messages from the house.
February the 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 44, First Responder Retirement Account Payment Rules. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. Senate File 46, Protecting Veteran Disability Compensation in Divorce. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. Senate File 74, Professional Licensing Military Spouses. Ayes 54, noes 5, excused 1. Senate File 78, Active Duty Medical Cost Reimbursement Program Amendments. Ayes 59, excused 1. And Senate File 144, Bidder Qualification Community Colleges 2. Ayes 44, noes 16. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 410, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 52, Natural Gas State Vehicles. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 36, noes 24. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. February the 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 407, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 130, Professional Licensing Military. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, excused 1. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. February 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 409, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 23, Challenge Loan Program, Natural Gas Vehicle Infrastructure. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 40, noes 20. The House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. February the 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 397, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 133, Human Trafficking. Ayes 39, excused 1. From the House of Representatives, message number 398, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 94, Immunization by Pharmacist. Ayes 43, noes 16, excused 1. Message number 401, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 215, State Investments for a Public Purpose. Ayes 58, noes 8, excused 1. Tricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 399, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill 187, Campaign Finance. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 18, noes 41, excused 1. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. February the 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message 400, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number one. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a light committee number one from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 187. The House conferees are Representative Stubson, Chairman, Representative Helverson, and Throne. February the 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 402, Joint Conference Committee Report adopted. Mr. President, House Bill 68, Life Resource Center. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number one report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, excused 1, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 411. Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Recedes from non-concurrence. Mr. President, House Bill 249, Budget Reduction Implementation. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number one report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, conflict 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. Is that it?
The Conference Committee for House Bill 187, Campaign Finance, is Hines, Chairman, Perkins. Don't you love me? And Escobel. We have concurrences, I guess. Senator Hines, are you ready on message number 409 in reference to Senate File 23?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
The reading clerk will read in the concurrence request.
February 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 409, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 23, Challenge Loan Program, Natural Gas Vehicle Infrastructure. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 40, noes 20. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do concur with message number 409 to Senate file 23 and to vote yes. But the House made two changes. And the first change where we had where the loans could be 100%, or there was no restrictions on them, they put in an amendment that 75% of the total cost, or $1 million, whichever is less. So that's just saying that whoever wants the loan have to put up 25% of the cost. The second change they made was they changed we set up in where we had loans not to exceed $5 million, and they added an amendment after $5 million loans, no further loans could be issued until they without the legislature approval. So I think they just tightened it up and having it go a little slower, and to me it looks like a pretty good way to operate, so I ask your approval.
Discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 23. You're asked to vote aye, and the Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Excused.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins? Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Ross?
Aye.
Nicholas, aye to no. Landon, aye to no. Burns, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 23 ayes, 8 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 23. Senator Scott, are you ready on message number 396 in reference to Senate File 73?
Yes, sir.
The reading clerk will read in the concurrence request.
February the 20th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 396, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 73, Unemployment Insurance Federal Compliance. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, noes 1, excused 3. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move we do concur with the House Amendment, Senate File 73, and ask you to vote aye. Mr. President, this is the federal compliance issue, and what happened over in the House is the newcomers on the House Labor Committee dug into this issue at some length and tried to figure out how the notification ought to be made and at what point an employer ought to be labeled as failing to respond. And the bad news, Mr. President, is it took them 3 tries to get it right. So look only at the third reading amendment. That's the only one that counts because it deletes the other two. And the good news is they eventually did get it right. And what they did was they required that the notifications be sent either by United States mail or by electronic mail, and basically to the address that the employer furnishes, which could be either one of those. So that takes care of that very nicely. They did remove the paragraph that defined what the employer being non-responsive was, because basically they saw a simpler way to do it. What amounts to the same thing. So, Mr. President, they did good work, and I urge the Senate to concur.
Any discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 73, and you've been asked to vote aye. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2 excused. Anderson District 28. Barnard. Beepout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Coe? Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel? Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer? Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 73. We have some joint conference committee reports. Joint Conference Committee report, reference Senate Message 276, House Bill 68. Reading clerk will read in that report.
Joint Conference Committee report, House Bill 68, Life Resource Center. Reference Senate Message number 276. Signing for the House, Representative Harvey, Filer, and Green. Signing for the Senate, Senator Scott, Bebout, and Kraft.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move we adopt the Joint Conference Committee report on House Bill 68, the Life Resource Center Bill. Mr. President, we met and discussed at some length with our House counterparts the ins and outs of this. We did roll over to the House on one Senate amendment that was added in Committee of the Whole that they felt took us too far down the road toward marketing the Life Resource Center and trying to get more people into it, and that runs certain litigation risks. So we conceded to them on that. We changed the Standing Committee amendment slightly, Mr. President. That's why that's shown as deleted. But we got most of what the Senate wanted on that. There was an extensive debate on the wording describing the clients there in the paragraph you see toward the bottom of the first page of the message. And we eventually said, well, if we said certain clients, that doesn't bias the outcome of the study one way or the other, and got agreement on that. So that was a slight language change. We had asked them to look at the possibility of taking in some clients from other states, which may have closed their institutions and had a few clients that were very expensive to handle. We thought maybe we could reduce our total cost by making a few dollars doing that. The House objected to that in principle, and we said, well, we understand we're so expensive we probably can't succeed, Mr. President. So the House objected in principle, and the Senate rolled over because as a practical matter, we didn't think we were going to get anywhere. And then we did increase, Mr. Chairman, from October 1st to November 1st, because the net result is to give the department a little more complicated study, and this gives them a little more time. So, Mr. President, that's the Joint Conference report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions on that.
Discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and I'm concerned over on the beginning page where the amendment comes in to page 2, lines 1 and 2. Mr. Chairman, my concern arises from the fact that there is consider input from guardians. Sadly enough, to consider input means that they may or may not be able to influence what goes on, particularly when the people that they're responsible for get moved. In other words, they don't willingly go. They may have already had experiences out in the community, and usually they were unsuccessful given the level of care. It seems to me that the word considers means, in fact, they're going to be moved whether they want to go or not, or whether the guardians believe it is in the best interest of the person in their care. I'm uncomfortable with that. I don't think it's going to do what this state needs to do and what is the responsible thing to do in terms of that facility.
Further discussion, Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just it seemed as though during our discussions that we favored the idea, and I thought it might have been our labor chairman who had the idea of looking at some out-of-state clients that we could possibly move into that facility and thereby reduce some of the overhead, some of the costs. I guess I'm a little mystified as to why the other side was so adamant against it. I thought it was a good idea, maybe a little more discussion about that. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Scott?
Mr. President, the language considers input from the guardians. That was language as it left the Senate, and the House didn't object to that. The thought all along has been that we ought to get input with the guardians and the parents. And if you look on page 3 of the bill at line 16 and following, that thought is there. This amendment that was adopted here in the Senate really was put in strengthening it so that there would be input on individual cases. Mr. President, it's hard for us to figure out how you'd word that differently. The thought is that the guardians ought to have a lot of input on that, probably almost controlling input on that. But you can't absolutely give them the right, the veto power, because if you have a circumstance where it's extraordinarily expensive for the state to keep somebody in the Life Resource Center, and we could do it a lot cheaper in a community program, the guardian may say, nope, we want the Cadillac treatment, the Rolls-Royce treatment, if you will, and the something lesser may be perfectly adequate. So you need to have, you can't give the guardians, I think as a practical matter, an absolute veto power. And short of that, the consider language is the best we could come up with. I represent to you it's better than the bill as introduced, because the Senate didn't add this amendment to make them consider in individual cases. So the Senate position on that, Mr. President, prevailed. On the second issue, with regard to the issue of taking in clients from other states, Mr. President, yes, I favored that as a matter of a chance to basically spread our overhead, take in some clients at less than the variable cost of serving them, and reduce the total net expenditure the state on those. And the information I got subsequent to the Senate action was that's all very fine, but it's kind of a waste of time because we're so expensive that nobody would do it. And given the expense of that institution currently, I think there's probably something in that. So the House felt that it was running risks of all kinds of protection and advocacy lawsuits. I think their fears may be overblown, but I think as a practical matter, we're fighting over something that isn't going to happen because we cost too much. So that's why that one, we were willing to roll to the House on that one.
Further discussion, Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'll rise on the cost issue, Mr. Chairman. I think that we really have to think about that, and whether it's in this bill or not isn't that important. But the issue is really whether you're talking about the average cost, which fully loads the overhead, or the marginal cost, or the incremental cost of taking somebody in, makes a huge difference. And I'll just tell you how our state thinks, and I'll give you an example. There are two leased buildings at the Life Resource Center right now. One's leased to a local school district for an alternative high school. It's called Pathfinder. And they pay like $4,000 a month for lease. The other one is leased to the Department of Environmental Quality, and I don't remember what the price of that is. So the state Department of A&I recently refigured their bills for those two things, Mr. Chairman. They sent the high school a bill saying that their new lease cost will be $200,000 a year because they took and fully allocated an overhead and did the space requirement. And that's the problem, and that's why that's so expensive. But to be honest, I think we can do this anyway. I intend to contact Montana and see what's going on up there myself, and so... That's not a hitch. I'm still a conflict on this bill. I wish to note that.
Okay. Motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to House Bill 68, you're asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2, excused. Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case Conflict. Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines. Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
no.
Scott,
aye.
Von Platern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 1 no, 1 excused, and 1 conflict.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to House Bill 68. Senator Case, are you ready with Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 to Senate File 36?
Yes, Mr. President.
Reading Clerk will read in the Conference Committee Report.
Joint Conference Committee Report, Senate File 36, Insurance Publication Requirements, reference House Message Number 377, signing for the House, Representatives Dan Zwanitzer, Blevins, and Gingery, signing for the Senate, Senators Case, Schiffer, and Scott.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move Joint Conference Committee Report referencing House Message Number 377 to Senate Files 36, Insurance Publication Requirements. Mr. President, this was the bill that I brought that eliminating publication requirements regarding insurance and put it on the website. As you recall, we added language here that required specific publications of names and NACH numbers of insurance companies and contact information. The House, down the hall, our friends thought it would be more useful to come up with a more general public service kind of publication requirements. That came back here on for a concurrence request. We rejected it because we thought that was sort of open-ended. If you recall, it said up to 12 times per year. It didn't have a minimum. We went to conference with that, and we agreed on this new language, Mr. President, which is in essence what our friends down the hall came up with, but we removed a sunset date that they had, which was going to eliminate this program after the year 2017, and we changed the language. You can see it in the middle there. It now says, shall be published no less than 6 times per year and no more than 12 times per year. And it's general information about public service information about insurance, Mr. President. I will also say that we were joined at our conference committee by the commissioner, the insurance commissioner, Mr. President. He assured us that they also will make a toll-free number available that they already have so that folks that don't want to use the internet, remember you don't have to, will be able to call an 800 number. I personally was persuaded that he really intends to use this to do some good work. I think the other members of both conference committees agreed. There were representatives from the industry there, including the press industry, Mr. President. I think everybody felt that this was a good compromise. I invite other members of the committee to speak, but I think it's a good. We finally got it somewhere that works for everybody. This will cost, for 12 times per year, will be about $350,000, Mr. President. The original cost was $600,000, so we're saving some money and doing a better job.
Discussion? The motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to Senate File 36. You've been asked to vote aye. And the Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2, excused. Anderson.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader, conflict. Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel. Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
President Russ.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 1 excused, and 1 conflict.
By your vote, you have adopted the Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to Senate File 36. Senator Perkins, are you ready on message of Joint Conference Committee Report in reference to Senate File 159?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk will read in the Conference Committee Report.
Joint Conference Committee Report, Senate File 159, Threats of Bodily Injury or Death. Reference House Message Number 354. Signing for the House, Representative Perk. Oh, that's for the. Oh. They got them mixed up.
Oh, we all signed on the wrong side of the page.
Yeah. Well, their names are all on the wrong side of the page.
Yeah.
Anyway, signing for the Senate, Senators Perkins, Anderson, 28, and Landon. Signing for the House, Representative Stubson, Gear, and Reeder.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Joint Conference Committee report for Senate File 159, referencing House Message 354, and ask for the body to vote aye. All we did in this, what the House had done is they had, well, let me back up, Mr. President. When Senate File 159 left the Senate, we had a very, very broad bill that created a misdemeanor for anyone who telephoned or electronically communicated or communicated in writing with threats to inflict death, injury, or physical harm to a person or any other person or any other person's property. The House narrowed that, so it was limited to that the person or the person's immediate family or property of the person. As we looked at that, Mr. President, I actually thought that was probably fairly good to narrow that down because it was an incredibly broad crime, and certainly innocent comments that you might do something to somebody else's derriere at some point in time might be not really rise to the level of a crime. So we met with the other committee. What we did is we settled on the following. We split it up and did it this way. We expanded threats to inflict death so they would apply to a person, to the person's immediate family, or to anyone at the school in which the person is a student or employee, thinking that, and the reasoning on that, Mr. Chairman, was if you go back and we look at the history of school tragedies in our recent history, almost every time, Mr. President, it seems like someone, there was an email or there was some kind of communication with someone that was threatening someone else at that school that was received by a person. If that person simply had made law enforcement aware of that, there may have been a tragedy to be able to avert it. So we left that, so we expanded the threats to inflict death. And then we left intact the lesser threats of inflicting injury or physical harm to a person or the person's immediate family. And then we limited threats of damaging property to simply the property of the person. We thought that was appropriate to rein that in a little bit. It would be an incredibly broad crime that we have. And the point of it was to simply, in those really serious situations, to allow law enforcement to go by and figure out if somebody is really a threat, Mr. President, or whether they're just being a jerk. And so with that, we thought that was a reasonable compromise. We'd ask for your favorable consideration and would stand ready to answer any questions if there are any.
Discussion? The motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to Senate File 159. You've been asked to vote aye. And the Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2 is excused. Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer? Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Ross?
No.
Nicholas, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 26 ayes, 3 noes, and 1 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in reference to Senate File 159. Reports from standing committees. I'll do enrolled acts later. We got to get.
I thought it was on. Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations. To whom was referred House Bill 230 in gross, School Safety and Security, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, and Perkins, excuse Senator Meyer, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader. We're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole.
Senator Hicks. Oh, first of all, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senator Hicks.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 132. Will the reading clerk read the House Bill?
House Bill 132, Chiropractor Licensure Amendment, sponsored by Representative Harvey, and Act Relating to Chiropractic Licensing Act. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Scott?
I move from the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so the recommendation that House Bill 132 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill 132, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 11.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of a standing committee amendment. Excuse me. Mr. Chairman, the standing committee, this is the chiropractor licensure revision bill. The standing committee amendment really was mostly language correction with regard to the expanding the scope of the practice to include venipuncture and acupuncture. The way that was placed, it was not quite clear what it was meant. And so that was just moved to a slightly different place to remove the uncertainty. The language, as it now says that chiropractors will not perform incisive surgery. We asked them in committee what they meant by that, and they said, we don't know how that got in there. We don't do surgery. So we took the incisive out. So it now reads, chiropractors shall not perform surgery, which is the existing law. which everybody seems to be content with, and then we just did a language correction. That's the standing committee amendments. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Standing committee amendments urge your adoption.
All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt standing committee number one to House Bill 32, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Standing committee amendment one to House Bill 132 is passed. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I yield to Senator Dockstader for an explanation of the House bill.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 132 was initiated when the Attorney General's office alerted the chiropractic board, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago, they needed to do some updates with their act. The board waited for a general session to do that. They talked about it last year, but we decided it wasn't right to do it in a budget session. They wanted sufficient review and time to work it over. They started laying the groundwork for this with the interim work of the Labor and Health Committee up in Lovell this summer. And during the process of coming through the legislative body, the board met with other interested parties and worked out the agreements you see here in the bill today. So here's a summary of what we have in front of us here today, and I'll just kind of go through the sections there. 101, venipuncture and acupuncture, they're added because they're part of a chiropractor's regular training, part of their curriculum now and what they study. And it was noted that venipuncture is not a surgery. It's a common part of health care and generally offered with, for example, blood draws at their health fairs and so forth. 101, X-ray was changed to imaging. Covers all the changes that go with diagnostic imaging. That's what it's generally called now, for example, ultrasounds and CTs. 102, 103, 104, it covers the members of the chiropractic board. The proposed changes call for one additional chiropractic physician and one member of the public at large. See, they had a problem when they only had three on the board. They had to do an investigation to consider revoking a license. One person on that board has to remain unbiased. The other two have to vote. Sometimes their votes would be against each other, and they needed some more membership on the board to break that tie. And also there were situations where maybe a board member couldn't attend a meeting, so they needed additional representation on the board. 105 allows for coverage of the chiropractors traveling with teams, for example, coming into the state with performing arts groups. They needed some coverage there so they could have licensing coverage. So that calls for a limit of 7 consecutive days under the Act for visiting chiropractors from another state. 105, the ownership of a practice is defined. 106, it oversees the application process, the educational requirements, accreditation programs. They have to meet specific training standards, and that's all covered by their board. 107, the board oversees the time, place of the subjects they cover. They have to have passing grades in everything in every subject. The board oversees that as well. 108, they eliminated death certificates. No longer will those be signed by the chiropractors. 109, they deal with the signage. For example, if they use doctor in their signage, has to have the word chiropractor on there as well. 110, board holds the right to renew or suspend licenses. It also deals with their code of ethics. 111, petition for judicial review is allowed. 113, requirements for continuing education and license renewals. That was moved to August, and then lapsed licenses have to be restored within a one-year time period. 114, there's refining language for the fees collected by the board to coordinate through the straight. Those are to be coordinated through the treasurer and the auditor. And the reimbursement language is to reflect a per diem and mileage allowance, similar to what's done with other boards in the state. 116, fines for illegally representing the practice, those were raised. And 117, a statement on the restrictions. So just a quick summary of the highlights of what we did with these amendments to their act. X-ray was changed to imaging, better describes what they're doing, working with now. Words of venipuncture and acupuncture, those were added to kind of reflect the changes in health care. Additional two members on the board of examiners, the chiropractic board of examiners, they will meet more than three times a year now, or allows them to meet more than three times a year. For example, if they needed to meet an additional time. They used to have to go back through the AG's office and use a, kind of a third-party system. So this gives them a little more leeway on their meetings. There's exemption for traveling chiropractic physicians or chiropractic doctors coming in with the teams. That was part of it. That clarifies the signage and then the continuing education requirements, and that regulates that a little closer. And the chiropractic students coming into the state can participate in internships or licensed with licensed chiropractors, and it increases the fines. That's a summary of what all the amendments do. And that's House Bill 132, Mr. Chairman.
There is a committee of the whole amendment. Would you like to have that read in at this time, Senator Scott? Could we read that in?
House Bill 132, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 6, line 15.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of this Committee of the Whole Amendment. Mr. Chairman, there's a prohibition which you see in a number of the professionals' acts against practice in a corporate setting where the chiropractors don't own it. And that was discussed in committee, and rather than hold the bill up, I volunteered to meet with them afterwards, and we worked that over a little, and this is the result. The first item is that the requirement now is that 51% of the equity in the entity is owned by a licensee. I said to them, what about having your spouse own some of it? That might be something you want to do for estate planning. And their reaction was, gee, we thought we already could. And no, it would be prohibited by the specific language. So that's the first thing we added, was so that their spouses could own part of the practice, or half of it, as the case probably would be. And then in the exceptions, we added an exception. So if they were a partnership or some other one of the Title 17 business entities, like a professional corporation, that's formed with other health care providers. So if a chiropractor, say, went in partnership with a PT and an OT, if they can overcome the professional objections there, that might make a lot of sense as a joint practice, and this would then permit that. So that's what the amendment does, Mr. Chairman. It loosens that restriction up in some ways I think will facilitate the professionals getting together in sensible combinations. Urge its adoption. Be happy to answer any questions.
All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 132, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion is passed. We're back on the bill. Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 132, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The bill is passed. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 203.
House Bill 203, Health Benefit Exchange Study and Select Committee, sponsored by Representative Harvey, and Act relating to the administration of government.
You've heard the reading of the bill.
It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, that reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, and Perkins. No, Senator Meyer, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading on the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a recommendation that House Bill 203 do pass And I yield to Senator Landon for an explanation of the House bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, fellow senators, I bring to you House Bill 203 as a result of spending the past year and a half in keeping an eye on this this issue called health benefit insurance exchanges. And throughout this session, senators, our labor and health chair, I think, has done a good job of reminding you that the feds are coming in the arena of health care, whether we like it or not. And this is one area that, ironically, the feds are coming, and that's what we chose. We chose not to meet specific deadlines, and so we will have a federally run health benefit insurance exchange beginning next January in the state of Wyoming. I have handed out and would commend you to this a piece of work by our staff attorney that was assisting us throughout the interim, and I have to tell you that after studying all of the federal manuals we could get our hands on and reading as much as we could on this issue of health insurance exchanges, this is one of the best documents that I've seen, and it was done by one of our attorneys in the back room. I hope you'll thank him for that, but it really is a great piece of work, and I'm not going to spend a great deal of time on it because I think you can read that yourselves. But it does a good job of catching you up to where we are in Wyoming with respect to the health benefit insurance exchanges. Just a couple of reminders at the middle of page one on this handout. You'll remember that there are three different ways you can go on those. We have chosen by not meeting certain deadlines to go the federally run benefit exchange here in Wyoming. We can, at a later date, fellow senators, opt in and become a state-based exchange, or we can become a partnership, and we can do that over the course of the next year or two. That is in part, and I will get to it here in a minute, but that is in part what we hope to be trying to accomplish with House Bill 203, being able to gather the right kind of information that we can bring back to you. I would take you over to the final page of the handout, fellow senators, and that's where I would remind you what Enrolled Act 42 of a year ago did, and that in the interim. And you'll notice that that particular act required that no person acting on behalf of the state prior to this coming April, 2 months from now, can commit the state of Wyoming to operating a health benefit insurance exchange, nor enter into any agreement that will cause the state to incur a financial penalty for failing to operate one. And so that's what has essentially placed this on hold, ladies and gentlemen. And so that takes us to today and takes us to House Bill 203. Mr. Chairman, I will run through the bill relatively quickly. Having taught some college classes in my time, I could certainly give you the 50-minute version, but I sense in the body that maybe the 5-minute version might be better. So if you'll turn to page 2 and go to paragraph D, the Department of Insurance shall apply for grants to fund any or all of the analysis and activities required by this act. What we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen, is use grant funding to do a lot of the studies and gathering of information that we want to try to bring back to you. If you turn to section 2 on page 3, under paragraph A, you will see the guiding principles that we've tried to set forth so that you will know what this select committee is up to on your behalf. And you can go down through little I, double I, triple I, and read those as well as I can, those guiding principles, all the way through to page 4. You'll notice that the following topics under Section 3, these topics and issues will be analyzed by this select committee if you choose to seat this committee. Outlined very carefully over on the top of page 5, we're going to study the operation of the exchange to determine the processes by which the exchange is operated, summarize the operation of the exchange, analyze the efficiency of its operation, and determine if the assumption of any exchange function would be of advantage to the state of Wyoming. That's where we come back to you with the recommendation as to whether or not any of those functions being operated by the federal government would be better operated by us, or if we would like to partner in that effort. To the extent an exchange is operated by the federal government, we would like to, with this committee, identify any benefits or detriments which may result. If you turn over to page 6, we continue with what we ask of that committee, changes in the insurance premium rates. We want to look at that. We want to pay attention to the characteristics of the persons who purchased insurance through the exchange so we can get an idea of who's accessing that portal. The risk pool created within the exchange, what are the demographics and the adequacy of that pool? The types of benefit plans that were offered in the exchange, because we want to find out if the State Employees and Officials Group Insurance Act was included. And, of course, the impact of the exchange on self-insurance plans. That's a lot of work, as you can see, that we have outlined for this select committee. If you move over to page 7, we're asking that select committee to study the possibility of the state entering into an interstate compact or an agreement with some other like-minded state. We have for a long time, fellow senators, thought that there might be some opportunity for some cost savings or some sharing of resources. That has proven to be a pretty difficult concept because you've got an awful lot of state rules and policies and laws out there, but we haven't given up on that idea. And to the extent, all the way to perhaps this select committee may want to arrange for and host a health symposium. You look down on line 16 through 18, select committee may arrange for a health symposium to promote those partnerships and avail ourselves to the opportunity to talk to those other states. If you go over to the middle of page 8, I would call your attention to subparagraph 6. Identify any function necessary in planning for the operation of an exchange or in the operation of an exchange which could not or should not be conducted by the state. That, ladies and gentlemen, is an opportunity that has begun to present itself. There are a lot of private companies out there who are surfacing, and it may behoove the state of Wyoming certainly to consider an outside source to run certain components of this health insurance exchange. And we would like for that select committee to look into that. You'll notice that we seat this committee all the way through until December of 2014. And at the bottom of page 8, we require that committee to report back to the Joint Appropriations Interim Committee and to the Joint Labor and Health and Social Services Committee. Later on, we require that committee to make a report back to the governor and again to those two committees, and that report would come in October of 2014. If you move over to page 10, Mr. Chairman, under Section 5, we have appropriated what I think is a modest amount of $37,000 to accomplish all of this in the next year and a half. As I mentioned, we're going to try to do all we can to encourage that insurance office to utilize grant funding, which would be provided by the federal government. All of those grant funds we will make sure do not commit the state of Wyoming to anything. Mr. Chairman, that's a quick nickel tour of the health insurance exchange select committee bill, and I'd be very happy to answer any questions.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question, it's in the bill, and it's something that you'll be looking at, but I just want to see how you would address it. And that's, you know, if you look at the current draft rules, that all exchanges be funded by user fees, so all of them are. That's what the feds are saying. But yet it goes on to say that the current proposal to charge 3.5% of each monthly insurance premium in federally facilitated exchanges. So as you're looking at this, I think there's some that language is sort of ambiguous as to relative to what the state would do compared to the feds and who would exactly pay that. I always thought if it was a federal exchange, they picked up the whole tab, but they may be requiring us, somebody, to pay 3.5%. So I just
bring that up as something that I'm sure you'll be looking at, and we'll see what it really says, and the devil's in the details. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, partial answer to that. The feds have this policy of sticking the tourists up to 3.5% to fund the operation of the exchange. That's a national policy. It's one of the things that's raising the cost of health insurance under the national reform. So that's the federal policy. My personal is that Wyoming's population is small enough so that if we were to do a state-run exchange, we would probably have to keep the cost of the insurance within reason. We'd probably have to come for a general fund appropriation. And that's obviously a matter of concern if we decide to run a state-based exchange. Feds are running their exchange. They're going to do it their way.
We like it or not. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to add to that, and there's not much I can add to what the chairman of our labor committee said, but that is a per member per month charge that we expect, from the feds. And that is, there's so many of those kind of details, fellow senators, that we've just got to keep an eye on. And we don't bring this recommendation to you lightly. Trust me, having spent the past year and a half trying to get arms around this very big item, I think I speak for my good friend from over in the valley that it's just there's so many details that we'd like to get a better handle on so that we can come back to all of you fellow senators with some good recommendations as to whether or not any of this makes any sense for the state of Wyoming to step in and try to help with. Even if we identify, folks, even if we identify some holes in what's going on or some things that aren't running quite as well as we would like, there remains the question whether or not we can have any impact, But I think this is important work that this select committee will be doing. It's pretty robust. We're asking quite a bit. But I think it's important that we do this. And so, thank you. I hope that answers the question.
There is a committee of the whole amendment. Could we have that read in at this time?
House Bill 203, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, to engross copy, page 5, line 20.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, this amendment does a couple of things, but the biggest item is in connection with the Medicaid program. Mr. Chairman, first item on the amendment is just correcting an illiteracy. The second item is, if you look on page five, these are in the list of things that the select committee is supposed to look at. Exchange operated federal government under the ACA. They've got to identify the list of things, and right now it's benefits or detriments to health insurance purchasers, employers, insurance companies, health insurance sellers, and the state. And what this amendment does is expands on the state. One of the big things now, if you're looking at benefits and detriments to the state, is the feds require the insurance exchange to include a portal where you can apply for Medicaid. And it's a federal requirement. It's going to be in all the exchanges. And so that's, by reference, that's already there. But what this amendment does is expand that and call particular attention to it. So this, including the state Medicaid program that's put into the list on page 5, line 23, is important. And then the next reference goes and expands on that, asks some of the data that you'd want, how many people are coming in through that portal. I was particularly sensitized to this. Of course, my committee has been working in the Medicaid area for the past year, but had a meeting during the session with the directors of the relevant departments involved, and it's quite unclear to me whether this portal in the exchange is going to be how we get the majority of our people into Medicaid, whether or not that will increase the or decrease the errors in enrollment. And those could be, we think, quite significant. And the new system has the potential for eliminating a number of those by automatically querying some of our other databases to see if they're telling us the truth about their income when they enroll. So this may be a major cost reduction possibility, or if the exchange is structured such that the applications come there, people don't get the proper guidance, enter bad information, it may be a major problem for us and increase our error rate. So that's what Three Little I is asking to look at. And then on page 8 after line 16, we're inserting in that list, one of the things we want an answer to is whether the state could improve the Medicaid application enrollment process through an exchange, state-operated exchange, or the new critter on the block, which is a partnership exchange, whether we could go the feds one better if we ran it ourselves. And that's a potentially, this has major cost implications for our Medicaid program, and I think it is worthy of special study by this committee, Mr. Chairman. So that's the essence of the that part of the amendment. There's a then Section 5 provides that we're going to wait for that data before we get into an expansion of the Medicaid program. You know, we debated that in this floor, decided not to get into that expansion. This says we aren't going to let the bureaucracy on its own get into that expansion, which they're open to under current law. And although we passed something that would have stopped that possibility, the other side didn't. So this is a needed thing. So I call your attention to that. That's very important to preserve that decision as a legislative decision. Now, Mr. Chairman, if we decide next year in 2014 that, say, Health and Social Services has offered us a deal we can't refuse and been really much more flexible than they have been on the Medicaid expansion, we could perfectly well come in, pass a law saying we'll do it and we'll repeal this section. But absent that, it keeps that from happening until after the 2015 general session. Mr. Chairman, one other thing that's on a different topic in the amendment. On page 8, there was a requirement select committee select a vendor for running an exchange if they're going to recommend it. Mr. Chairman, that's not appropriate for a legislative committee. That should go through the normal state processes. And so that's why that's changed to vendors. That's a cleanup. Mr. Chairman, that's the amendment. I'd be happy to answer any questions on it.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would like to introduce some guests we have up in the West Balcony that I can't see. So if they'll stand up, will the Senate please welcome the dental hygiene students from Laramie County Community College.
We're back on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 203. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to divide the amendment. Division 1 is lines 1 through 37, and Division 2 is line 38 through line 4 on page 2.
The chair rules that is divisible.
What? Oh, the last three go in Division One.
What was, Senator Schiffer, what was your last division?
There are just two divisions, Mr. Chairman. Lines 1 through 37 on page 1 and lines 5 through 7 on page 2.
The chair rules that is divisible. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I support Division 1.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that that Division One is fine. I do have a little bit of a question as to how much of this of this Medicaid information we're pulling into a health benefit exchange bill. It is somewhat related, and so I think we're okay with Division One. So vote it up, vote it down. I think it's probably all right to pass Division One. Thank you.
Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman, I think the original call for the division by the sponsor of the division was correct, going lines 1 through 37, and then the remainder of the bill being separate. My understanding is we just put back lines 5 through 7 on the second page as part of Division 1, but that would only be required if Section 5 was inserted, which is part of Division 2. I believe the original motion on the division by the good senator from KC was the correct interpretation, not the way we revised it.
The chair rules that that is a correct division, that section on page 2, line 5 through 7, would be a different division.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I rise to agree with my colleague from Albany County. I think your Division 1 is lines 1 through 37, page 1, and then the balance of the amendment, which is lines 38 through 45 on page 1, and all of page 2 is appropriately the second division.
All right. Division 1 is line 1, or page 1, line 1, through line 37. So we're clear. Division 2 is line 38 through 45 on page 1 and all of page 2. All right. You call for the question on division number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those oppose? The division 1 to Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 203 has passed. We're back on Division 2. Senator Hassert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On Division 2, I would like a ruling that this section, Division 2, is not germane to the bill and is out of order.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, frankly, it is germane to the bill. What the bill has done, what the amendment has done, is taken the Medicaid issue, which is already in the language on page 5 by implication, where they're looking at the benefits to the state, and that would include the Medicaid program, and what it's done is say that's a topic worthy of some additional prescription in terms of make sure the committee looks at that, although they're clearly already authorized in the bill to do that. And then the Division 2 says we aren't going to get into that Medicaid expansion issue until we've got this other issue in Medicaid settled, and, Mr. Chairman, that's entirely germane to the bill. There's already an item prohibiting us from doing another expansion in the ACA in there on page 3 at the top of page, well, it actually starts, no, it starts at the top of page 3, lines 1 through 3 there. And, Mr. Chairman, you'll notice this amendment does not expand the title. Everything's done with it. Done here is within the title.
Senator Hassert.
Mr. Chairman, it is my belief that Article 3, Section 20, no law should be passed except by bill, and no bill shall be so altered as to amend its passage through either house as to change its original purpose. I believe by adding this, this is adding a prohibition into the bill that isn't part of the title, and adding the Medicaid expansion.
Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and a reading of the title of the bill indicates that it doesn't have anything to do with whether we opt into Medicaid or opt out. But in addition to that, if you go over on page 9, this is a bill authorizing a select committee. The select committee goes away in 2014. This amendment stays into effect till 2015. It doesn't have anything to do with the select committee. It's a great piece of standalone legislation, I concede that. But it just doesn't quite fit into this round hole with that sort of square peg.
Ruling from the chair on Division 2 of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, is it is germane to the bill.
Convening of the Rules Committee.
There's been a request of the convening of the Rules Committee. That committee will convene. Members of the Senate, you will stand in recess until that committee has reported back. Stand at ease.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, it's Larry. Committee of the Whole will please come to order. Senator Ross, President Ross, would you give us a ruling from the Rules Committee?
Your Rules Committee met, Mr. Chairman. The Rules Committee sustained your ruling that the portion of this amendment is germane. We looked at lines 1 through 3 in the title, which the ruling of the committee was is that when you add in the language and related functions under federal law, that was broad enough to encompass the proposed amendment, and therefore we ruled that it was germane.
Senator Hassert.
Mr. Chairman, are we back on Division 2 of the amendment?
Senator Hassert, we are back on Division 2 of the Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 203.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. On and against Division 2, I believe that by putting this language in, putting the prohibition in, that limits this body next session from being able to look at health insurance as Medicaid expansion as they rightfully, this body should make that decision next session. You've already seen other states, through the course of our own deliberations here, other states have joined in to the Medicaid expansion. And our own director indicated that of Department of Health, that if we can get it by next session, we can still get into this without penalty. Now, whether or not we need to study exchanges or get some reports back, it sure seems like we can make that decision next session on our own. And I feel that we should defeat this amendment and make that decision for that should come from this body and the next session. If we have another bill or other legislation or other discussions, we'll make that decision at the appropriate time.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and for this division of the amendment. Mr. Chairman, the amendment in no way limits what the legislature can do next session. All it does is mean that if we decide, any of us, to bring a bill to get into Medicaid expansion next time, before we get this report, you've got to include a repealer of this section if you want to do that. That's a very simple exercise in drafting a bill. That doesn't constrain what we might want to do at all. What it does do is constrain the agencies, which we're open to uniquely in this process of having a state agency on its own, presumably with the governor's approval, but even possibly without, going ahead and signing up for the exchange before we, the legislature, or the Medicaid expansion before we, the legislature, are ready to do it. And that preserves, this part of the amendment, preserves our right to make that decision until we have seen the results of this study. And the exchange portal is a major part of the, in the exchange portal, the Medicaid enrollment portion is a major part of the function of the health insurance exchange. It may or may not, and we simply don't know at this point, be a more effective way of enrolling people. It may or may not increase the error rate. We need to find that out and know it. It may be that if we do the exchange, that we can fix any problems in the Medicaid enrollment portal on our own. Maybe we can't. We need to know those things before we make a decision at the 2015 session, Mr. Chairman, and then we will have to make a decision. Do we want to have the legislature expand the Medicaid program? Do we want to revert to the current law, which is the state agency can do it on their own? And in this case, they really can, because for the first 3 years of the program, Mr. Chairman, the feds are claiming they're going to pay everything, so all they need is a B-11 process. Mr. Chairman, I think this is a very important piece of this particular bill so that we preserve the legislature's right to make a decision until we have completed this study and had a hard look at the effect these exchanges are going to have on our Medicaid enrollment process.
Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just a question for the sponsor. I'm trying to remember, going back through the many statements I've heard, did the governor ask for this to happen? In other words, he's the one that decides this, if this amendment doesn't go through. And did he ask to have this amendment brought in? As a matter of fact, I don't think he did, but I don't think he asked for this amendment either. Did he, or did he? Maybe he did. I can't remember.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I did not consult. Mr. Chairman, I figure it's our job, the state legislature, to get things fixed the way we want it. And if we choose to constrain the executive's ability to do things, that's our business.
Senator Hassert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think that some of the various reasons that our own tall senator from Natrona County has talked about is the reason why we should defeat this. Our own director has indicated in our committees that, you know, there wasn't a necessary need for resources to look into, look into the viability of us joining the exchanges, or excuse me, the expansion of Medicaid. And the right thing to do is to be able to have our agency. That's what they're there for. That's what we've asked them to do, to be looking into the impacts and the implications of federal legislation and how it impacts the state, and to tie their hands. I think it would be a big mistake for this body to tie their hands and not allow them that flexibility, especially when they don't need additional resources to do that. We were better informed and better prepared by the next session in order to make that decision on our own, whether or not the decision will be ours. The agency can't do this without our approval. So the decision will be ours. But I believe it's important that they have information. The more information we have provided to us, the better informed decisions we make.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You remember earlier in the session when we dove off the highway and down into the bar pit a little bit? I think we did that here a little. All of a sudden, we ended up with a bill that covers all sorts of things with this study committee, and that's okay. I just, I have a little bit of heartburn with the second division of this amendment. I'm not so certain that we need to tie our hands for the next 2 years with this kind of language. We can vote it up, vote it down. I guess what we're saying there is that we really don't want to expand it because we've already voted on it. I've already talked about it. I would just call for question. Let's get rid of Section 2.
Question's been called, and Senator, I have no recollection of any borrow ditches, for the record. Question's been called on Division 2 of Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 203. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those oppose?
No.
Ayes have it.
Division.
Division's been called. Will the clerk please count? All those in favor, please rise. Those opposed? the motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, Division 2 to House Bill 203 has passed. We're back on the bill. Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt House Bill 203, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Ayes have it. Let's see. House Bill 203 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 217. Will the reading clerk please read it in?
House Bill 217, Atomic Energy Act Agreement State Study, sponsored by Representative Miller, and Act relating to environmental quality. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Hines.
Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rises to report. It does so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 217. There is a standing committee amendment, and I ask that it be read in at this time.
House Bill 217, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 13.
Mr. Chairman, I move the amendment, and I'll yield to Senator Cooper to explain the bill and the amendment.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I'll do is to go through the bill, and we get to the one point for the amendment. I'll ask to have a vote on that. That's a small part of this. If you'll look on your desk, members of the Senate, there's a handout. Looks like this. It has House Bill 217 on it. It kind of follow through maybe as I go through this with you as I talk about it. What House Bill 217 does, it authorizes the Department of the Environmental Quality to initiate a study to investigate the feasibility of Wyoming becoming an agreement state with the NRC, which is the National Regulatory Commission, which regulates all the nuclear things that we have today here in our country. The study will evaluate the scope of the new Wyoming State Regulatory Program for the oversight of the uranium recovery industry. And fellow senators, the way that works now is we actually have some jurisdiction over uranium mining and the in situ part of it and the mining part of it, but we do not have the jurisdiction over the milling part of it. So this will take that into consideration as we move through the bill. You'll see that. Under the Act, a state has the right to assume certain regulatory programs from the federal government. This includes uranium recovery, but this does not include anything having to do with regulation of nuclear power plants, which remain still exclusively with the federal government. If Wyoming becomes an agreement state, regulation of the uranium recovery would rest exclusively with the state without any direct federal government involvement. And in other words, the state would have primacy over those types of permits here in Wyoming. There are 37 agreement states, including Colorado, Utah, and Texas, where there are significant current future production. And just to kind of bring you up on a few statistics, or a statistic that is, right now, there's 24 pending permits in the United States for uranium mining, and 16 of those 24 are here in Wyoming. The NRC conducts all of their regulations from their headquarters in Rockville, Maryland, and they have a huge role in deciding a significant part of Wyoming economy, whereas in the past, the NRC used to maintain an office in Denver where decisions were more timely. And cooperation with the state was a lot better. This program, they charge a great deal of money right now for this process of permitting, like something like around, we heard in testimony, like somewhere around $270 an hour. So these programs are a self-funding program, whether they're under the state or under the federal government. The time period for licensing a new uranium recovery operation through the NRC is about 4 to 6 years, which is in most cases 2 to 3 times longer than any state review period. This places Wyoming at a serious competitive disadvantage to the uranium mining agreement, as versus to other agreement states. Wyoming uranium industry supports this study and the opportunity to becoming an agreement state. Since 2009, with the dramatic regulatory grab of the NRC that was created a unity by the industry that becoming an agreement state is the best path of the industry in protecting the natural resources of Wyoming. And the bill also provides for $100,000 funding of study, and I'll get into that when I get going through the bill. But the uranium industry has offered a willingness to match the funds to pay for this study. I'll move on to the bill now and talk about the bill. So let's look at on page one, of course, in the intro, it describes the providing that a study shall be commissioned to determine the feasibility of the state Wyoming becoming an agreement state under the Atomic Energy Act of 1954, which is actually what the NRC operates under today. Then going down to section one, by the way, section one, two, and three are all new language. And so in little A, starting on line 13 on page 1, it talks about the Department of Environmental Quality, in consultation with the Attorney General's Office and also the Governor's Office, shall commission a study to determine the feasibility of managing a radiation protection program, moving over to page 2, that is consistent with federal statutes and regulations. Then also it talks about this study shall focus on statutory, regulatory, and budgetary changes necessary for the state of Wyoming to become an agreement state. What this is the primacy clause, and this is where we would take primacy over the permitting of mining and milling. Moving down into section B here on page 2, we get into talking about the fact that there is a report that will be due to the Joint Minerals, Business, and Economic Development Interim Committee, not later than. And, Mr. Chairman, this is where the committee felt that we should give them a little bit more time on this study, so we moved it up a couple months. And in the amendment, all the amendment does is change that October 1st date to December 1st, 2013, and that is on line 13 on page 2. So, Mr. Chairman, if we could have a vote on that, I'd appreciate it this time for that amendment. It's already been moved.
All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion to adopt Standing Committee Number 1 to House Bill 217, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Amendments passed. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just wrap it up here then. The report should focus on, it's like I said, the natural statutory, regulatory, organizational, and budgetary changes for the state of Wyoming to become an agreement state. And what this does, like I said, is eliminates the dual federal and state regulation over uranium industry in Wyoming, which is a benefit both to our economy but to our environment. And then on Section C, it then again talks about the Joint Minerals and Economic Development Interim Committee, when they have to receive this report, then they can the committee can act on it to whether or not they want to do some legislation to include this in the budget session of 2014. And that's what that's about. Section 2 talks about the appropriation of $100,000 for this study. And like I said, the industry has mentioned they'd be willing to work with us on this issue. Section 3 is just it's enacted effective immediately, and that's because there isn't a whole lot of time between now and December, so we thought we'd better get it moving on us if we do this, Mr. Chairman. That's the bill.
Are you ready for the question? Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion with the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 217, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 217 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 234. Will the reading clerk please read it in?
Program, sponsored by Representative Green. an act relating to public assistance and social service. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott. No, Senators Anderson, 28. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 234 do pass. There was no standing committee amendment, and I yield to Senator Dockstader for an explanation of this good little House bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You recall the departments around the state were charged with looking for reductions. This is one of the reductions that DFS found and wanted to include and take care of in statute. House Bill 234 goes into 42-2501, what is the low-income home energy assistance program, and it repeals a section specifically dealing with cooling efficiency modifications, repairs, and replacements. Mr. Chairman, it leaves everything else in place, the weatherization programs, the caulking insulation, the storm windows, leaves furnace and heating systems in place, repairs for those. Furnace replacement is still there. Repair or replacement of water heaters and heating systems, that's all part of that. But what the department felt and what they based on usage, just wasn't a lot of interest in that. Essentially, we live in an area where the winter season arrives early and often stays way beyond its welcome, and there just wasn't a lot of need for this part of the statute. They saw a need or an area where they could cut back and make a reduction as requested. And so that's House Bill 234. Ask for your favorable approval.
Question been called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion and the Committee of the Whole rise and report that you have a favorable recommendation on House Bill 234, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 234 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 237. For the reading clerk, please read it in.
House Bill 237, Unemployment Insurance Worker Misconduct, sponsored by Representative Reeder, an act relating to unemployment insurance. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Lex and Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, and Nutting. Excuse Senator Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure your microphone's on, Mr. Chairman, but I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a do-pass recommendation on House Bill 237, Unemployment Insurance Worker Misconduct. There are no standing committee amendments. For an explanation of the bill, I would yield to the good senator from Natrona County, as opposed to the bad senator, but they're all good in Natrona County. But this one is especially good right now.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And gee, thanks for that compliment. I don't think the good senator from Landers ever called me good before, but I appreciate that. Mr. Chairman, all we've got before you in House Bill 237 is a change to the definition of employer misconduct. What we're doing here in this bill and what we find, and I think if you talk with your employers around the state, there's been a tremendous frustration with employers as they terminate employees for various reasons. Sometimes what would seem to be the most common sense reason for a termination when they go and they challenge seeking unemployment benefits, but oftentimes the ruling seems to go against the employer. That the conduct, which normally you would think you would be obvious to be fired for, simply doesn't arise to that level. So all we're doing here is trying to create a definition for misconduct, and you can see the definition is there at the top of page 2. Ultimately, if we're acting in a disregard of the employer's interests or commonly accepted duties and obligations and responsibilities of an employee, then that's misconduct, and it's connected with work. It doesn't include ordinary negligence, or if you make a mistake in good faith, it doesn't include those things. But we're talking about, and what's been, quite frankly, is oftentimes incredibly shocking without going into lurid detail, incredibly shocking activity on behalf of employees with each other at the workplace, results in termination, and yet when those are appealed, because we don't have a clear or we don't have the definition necessarily of misconduct connected with work, that oftentimes those claims are upheld and the employers are frustrated about this. We bring this to try and correct that, and with that, that's the explanation. I would certainly stand for questions.
Mr. Chairman, question for the sponsor. Misconduct connected with work does not include ordinary negligence in isolated instances or good faith errors. Mr. Chairman, I wonder about that particular exception, because if the good faith error or the ordinary negligence of isolated incident, if the isolated incident was bad enough, disregard of a safety rule that got somebody badly hurt, disregard of normal maintenance procedures that resulted in a very expensive machine being torn up, it strikes me an individual case could be bad enough so that an employer could say, look, if he's going to do that even once, I don't want him around. It's time for him to go down the road. So I wonder about that sentence exception.
Senator Lamar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I had some misgivings, I guess, about some of that other stuff. I mean, the same area there. I mean, I guess I'll put in an example that if you have someone that that my employer's interest is the guy not to tear down the gatepost when he goes through the gate, but he continues to do it. Now, that's negligence, and I'm sure that every time that he went through the gatepost, he probably said, well, no, gee, I didn't mean to hit that gatepost, you know, or I didn't mean to run into that machinery, or I didn't mean to do this. It sounds like That's a pretty big door to walk through that isn't considered misconduct, because it certainly would be against the employer's interests to do those type of things. So I'm just kind of curious here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that actually I think you'd be maybe surprised to find out that those are not covered. Those wouldn't constitute employee misconduct at this point in time. And certainly the bill moves in that direction. If I'm happy to work with folks if they have a better or more specific language they would like to discuss. And if for a second reading amendment, I'd be happy to work with them. I would point out that what we're talking about, if you read the definition in its full context, it does not include ordinary negligence in isolated instances. And so I would submit that if you've got a repeat of a situation that you, all of a sudden it's not an isolated incident. I mean, ultimately, if you start to have two, certainly three types of mistakes that are made consistently, that making the same mistake, I would submit that that's not an isolated instance. Additionally, I think that when you look at those other things, where if there's clear warning labels or clear warning signs, or you've got clear direction with clear training on tearing up machines or other things like that, and they violate those things, I think that starts to take it outside of ordinary negligence or even good faith. But like I say, right now, I don't think that those things are covered and constitute misconduct now. So that's my answer for that. I'd certainly be happy to work with my colleague from Natrona County or my good friend that sits behind me on language if they have some suggestions.
You're ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Chase's motion of committee of the whole rise and the forces do so with the favor of recommendation on House Bill 237, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 237 has passed the committee of the whole, and the next bill for our consideration is House Bill 259.
House Bill number 259, State Elected Officials, Board Votes, and Chairmanship, sponsored by Representative Harshman, an act relating to boards and commissions.
Sure.
It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, and Nutting. Excuse Senator Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill Number 259, State Elected Officials, Board Votes, and Chairmanship. And I'd like to mix it up a little bit, and I'd like you to yield to the pretty good senator from Natrona County.
Oh, I'm busy.
Okay, thank you. Now I just went from good senator to bad senator. Mr. Chairman, I commend to you House Bill 259 and ask for favorable consideration on this little bill. What we're doing here at the bottom of page one, I'm just trying to provide for a chairman in an absence. But the real crux of this bill is actually on page, and what we're trying to do is on page two, on lines 14 and 15, and also back on page 3, lines 13 and 14. The point in what we're trying to do in this bill is you may be surprised to know that oftentimes in a number of proceedings of committees and other things in state lands and in other meetings and of the various boards that our five elected sit on, they don't take and record what the votes are in those committee meetings. And you go back and look at the minutes, and oftentimes, more often than not, the how the actual five electeds voted is not contained in the record and is not available unless you were to talk to them and they happen to remember. And so what we're trying to do here is simply provide some additional transparency in government, that when people vote that it's recorded, and so that folks can go back and look at records and see how people vote. Ask your favorable consideration.
Ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt House Bill 259, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 259 is passed Committee of the Whole. Next House bill for our consideration is 177.
House Bill 177, Hathaway Success Curriculum. Sponsored by Representative Crone, an act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Barnard, Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss, Senator Co-Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Do so. Do pass recommendation on House Bill 177. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that be read in at this time.
House Bill 177, standing committee amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 5.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that amendment and defer to Senator Rothfuss.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I bring Hathaway Success Curriculum, House Bill 177, and a little bit of backstory on this. You may recall a very similar piece of legislation 2 years ago. The House started the bill a couple of years ago, and we amended it over here in the Senate. We made it a much better bill. When we went to conference committee, they refused to accept our recommendations, and the bill died a painful death. 2 years later, a couple of weeks ago, they came back to us admitting the error of their ways, bringing us exactly what we recommended 2 years ago, and I urge you to once again support it. It's a good little bill. Mr. Chairman, the Hathaway Success Curriculum, as I think everybody in the body knows, is the required set of courses to achieve the Hathaway Scholarship to the university and to our colleges throughout the state. We have four levels of requirements depending on which type of scholarship you're going to get, whether that's the honors, the performance, the opportunity, or the provisional opportunity. Each of those requires 4 years of math, 4 years of science, 4 years of English, and 3 years of social studies type education, as well as 2 years of language at the higher levels, and then some variation to the language requirements at the lower levels where some other things may be accepted, but more or less 2 years, and you can see that in the way the statutes are. We've heard in testimony over the past few years, particularly 2 years ago when this was first introduced, but again this year, that adding fine and performing arts or career vocational or career technical education to the mix was going to be positive for our students and was now something that was recognized as being essential to college success, college performance. This legislation recognizes that and tries to bring in specialization either in fine and performing arts or in career vocational education. And the way it's structured can be seen on page 2. There's a list of requirements for the honors and performance scholarship eligibility. That list currently includes language and the others that I mentioned. This would add, effective school year 2015 and 2016, a choice between either 2 years of instruction in fine and performing arts, all of which shall be taken in grades 9 through 12, or career vocational education, 2 years of instruction, all of which will be taken in grades 9 through 12. So you have to do one or the other to have the top two tiers to be eligible for them, as well as your GPA and your ACT score requirements and the rest of the success curriculum. When you look at the provisional opportunity and the opportunity scholarship under this legislation, it goes from that and list where you're adding a requirement to changing it to an or list. Because again, we heard a lot of instances where people were not interested in taking foreign language. They wanted to do something which is a career technical education, a career in vocational, to go to a college and study a technical area, and that they felt that there wasn't as much need to do the foreign language as there was to specialize in one of these types of areas. Recognizing that, we have, for those two tiers, for opportunity and provisional opportunity, a change that is, again, effective 2015, 2016, and each year thereafter, that it would be a requirement for either 2 years of foreign language or 2 years of fine and performing arts or 2 years of career vocational education. So what this bill does is it extends the requirements in the cases of the honors and performance. It's an and situation requiring either 2 years of career technical or 2 years of fine and performing arts. And then at the other two levels, provisional and opportunity, it's an or list which would remove the requirement of 2 years of language. That's one option. That could be the option chosen. But it gives two more options to those individuals, which would include either fine and performing arts or that career technical education. I think it expands and extends rigor in ways that this body favored in the past, and I would hope the body would favor it again, Mr. Chairman. And with that, I would move on to the Standing Committee Amendment at this time, which is simply a clarification of grammar. And it goes into page 2, line 5, where it says, effective school year 2015-2016, and it adds, and each school year thereafter, or something very similar to that, since I can't find my amendment. But it's correcting language that mirrors the language that's provided on page 3 for the other situations. And it is just clarification to make sure that it's not only the school year 2015-2016 to which it applies, but actually the years after that as well. If there's no questions on the Standing Committee Amendment, Mr. Chairman, I'd call for the question on that clarification.
Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to accept Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 77, please say aye.
Aye.
We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is the bill, and at this point, I'd answer any questions or concerns.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, one thing about being in this new position is I get to look at these bills and think about them a long time and on and against this bill for a couple reasons. You know, you've seen a lot of emails, and frankly, if the purpose for the Hathaway program was to ensure that all of your students went 4 years of high school and that they're well-rounded, and you feel that this well-rounding is required with respect to the honor and the performance, fair enough. But that's not what we set up the Hathaway program. The Hathaway, particularly at the honor and performance program, was to reward excellent achievers and insist that they take curriculum that would force that would cause them to succeed in college and well beyond. And now what you're saying is that not only do you have to take all certain these math programs, but you have to take either a voc-ed class. In my children's class, that would probably have been a computer-assisted design, a CAD program, or two of them. But you now have to plan 2 years of that, and you have to do performing arts. And, you know, I took voice lessons, and you probably don't know that, but I took voice lessons, and I took choir, and I'll tell you what, it didn't help me in the college performance. But there are many kids, and I mean, there's no studies out there that I'm aware of, that if you take performing arts, that it will prove your college career. And what it will do is it'll insist that you have, by adding those two classes on, you'll have to spend your whole 4 years in high school, where we were lucky enough to have opportunities for our children to go take classes at the university. They were advanced math. They were advanced classes in sciences that weren't even offered at the high school. They couldn't do that with this element. There wouldn't be enough hours. And frankly, this appears to me to be an effort by teachers to make their classes relevant, as opposed to insist that these are requirements for success. Now, when you shift to the success and the career path, we now say foreign language is optional. Now, for all of those have been around, I mean, we started this program when we began the school effort back when Campbell 1 began. One of the things that we identified is that in the United States, it's crazy that we don't have, that our children can't speak another foreign language. In my case, it was Japanese and Spanish. But everybody should know another language. And one of the problems about our culture is that we don't teach people to be bilingual. And in fact, we know that it helps improve your career and your success. And now to say that, well, you can go out and take choir or those other, and that's a substitute for foreign language. It's not. It's not a substitute for success in the world. It doesn't elevate the students in Wyoming above students elsewhere or worldwide, and we're looking for worldwide participation. And foreign language was one of the things that we started at. In fact, for those of you who remember, we actually started requiring it third grade. And one of our colleagues from, it was Goshen County, was just adamant that kids ought to learn Spanish from day one all the way on. And it's too bad we're not doing that. But languages are essential for success and for worldwide competition. And in the first instances, they're not necessary, and they limit the honor students who may say, look, I want to take trigonometry. I want to take advanced calculus. I want to take these other math and sciences, and now I have to slow down and take two of these classes. And there's no showing that those are necessary for performance. We've got kids going to MIT that wouldn't even have time for this, and they may go when they're 9th and 10th graders. On and against the bill.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I don't often agree with a good senator from Park County or the other senator from Albany County on this floor, and we all know that, but I think these guys got it at least half right this time, especially for the career vocational education. The rural folks out there have made it very clear to me that they felt slighted in the whole Hathaway process by not putting a little more emphasis on career and vocational education. And, Mr. Chairman, I think it's extremely important for that education. And it's And it is for success, Mr. Chairman, because as the good senator from Natrona County in front of me here and I were talking earlier this session, he brought up some statistics, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was something like 57% of the kids go to college out of Wyoming high schools, but there's only like 22 or 25% of the new jobs require a college education in Wyoming. And the rest of them, folks, are vocational jobs. These are jobs that people make good money at if they're well-trained. And why not give folks, kids, the opportunity to make sure that they have that opportunity to get that training and to advance into the other levels of the scholarship? I can't see any reason for that not occurring, Mr. Chairman. And so I think on and for the bill, I think we can talk about some of the requirements in the cases that the good senator from Albany County talked about of people who, kids that necessarily would receive no benefit from these classes, to make sure the flexibility is there. I'm not so sure that the flexibility already isn't in the bill, but, folks, I'd say for the majority of the kids, they're going to come out of our high schools for the majority of the jobs that's available in our state, I think it's necessary to pass this piece of legislation along.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm against the bill. Mr. Chairman, when we put the pathway success curriculum together, I was on the committee that did that. We basically took the standard college prep curriculum that guidance counselors around the state have been recommending since the year one, because that's what you really need to be successful in college. We did add the foreign language requirements, and you've heard it, and those were in some of the recommendations and not all of them. And I think you've heard very eloquently on that subject. But we wanted to leave, Mr. Chairman, wanted to make sure they got the basics that are required for success in college, and then leave enough flexibility so that students would have the ability to pursue some of these fine arts, some of these other interests. Could be advanced mathematics, could be fine arts, could be any of those.
And the trouble is that some of the teachers of the elective subjects have felt they were being left out. And that's why we see these continual pushes to change the success curriculum and include, to where the kids won't have any flexibility. So I would urge, I think that's what's wrong with the first part of this bill. The second part, with regard to the flexibility in the career and vocational, we had thought going into that committee, at least I had thought, that, well, we wouldn't, with the career and vocational, we wouldn't need to require as much out of those students. And a number of people from the business community came forth and said, in the nature of business in these United States and this state today, you need to have the rigorous curriculum. And that's why that's the way it is. And frankly, there, the foreign language is especially important, because a number of the job opportunities that come up that for some of our skilled people with vocational skills are in some of the foreign countries. You know, Mexico, Venezuela is probably not as friendly to us, but Mexico and some of the other places have real opportunities for people who are skilled in the oil business. And if you're going to go down there knowing some basic Spanish, which is the most common foreign language taught here, is real important. So for all those reasons, I think this bill is a mistake, and we'd be better off stick with the success curriculum structured as it is now.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A little bit earlier in the session, I was making my way around town and came across a parent who
I didn't have a tag on or anything, but they saw the suit and asked. They didn't want to know about gas taxes or guns or lotteries. They said, how are we doing with the Hathaway Success Curriculum? I said, well, it's still out there being considered. And he said, my daughter's a high school freshman here in Cheyenne, and her focus is on music. So I said, have her write me. She did. I'll just paraphrase. I won't read it in detail. She's an all-state orchestra student here, and she's preparing her schedule for the coming year. And she says that she's not focusing on the languages or what would come with those. She's going to have a career in music, fine arts, the performing arts. And the Hathaway Success Curriculum would open up that opportunity for her. She said that many of her peers are in a similar situation, waiting for this change. Greatly benefit the proposed changes to this scholarship. Please consider art and the performing arts students when voting on these proposed changes. This comes from a freshman here in Cheyenne asking us. I submit to you that this bill is not a mistake, and I submit to you that we shouldn't limit our definition of what success is. It's time to pass House Bill 177, Hathaway Success Curriculum.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think there's a misconception here that for some reason with honor and performance scholarships that we're taking foreign language out. We aren't taking that out. That's still in there. It's in paragraph 5. And it does say or. It doesn't say you have to take both fine arts and vocational education. It says or. Now, let me just say a couple things about the language side of that. When we did the success curriculum, we looked into rigor in the program, and foreign language was a big part of that. That is still in there. It doesn't go away. It's still there. If you're a student from Wyoming and you want to go to CSU, you got to have 2 years of a foreign language. Foreign language clearly adds rigor to what we're talking about here. So I think there's a misconception that foreign language comes out of the honor and performance scholarship, so that's just not the case. I'd ask that you support the bill. I think it's a good bill. It's the way it left the Senate 2 years ago.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I'd say to your constituent who says, you know, my son or daughter has this great aptitude in music, remember, this is not changing. When you look at the honor and the performance requirements, this is an additional requirement. So if your child is taking music and taking those things, they still have to do the 4 years of, or the math, the physics, all the requirements, and a language. They have to do that, and they're required to have music. And now what you're saying is that since my child loves to do music, everybody else has to do it. So this is an additive requirement that you either have to do music or you have to do the career voc ed. So with respect to the higher levels, this is an additional requirement. It's not an alternative requirement that you get to eliminate language or one of the math courses. This is additive. Now when you go to the language, and I go to if you've got a son or daughter that wants to go to a higher education and they are a world-class musician, if they want to get into even UW or else, they've got to take language. And what you're saying now is don't take language. Well, you have to. And there's plenty of hours out there for electives. Some people might choose it to be voc ed. They might become proficient at computer-assisted graphics or woodworking or music. Those are what you do with your elective hours. So if you think you're going back to your constituents and said, hey, we've just relieved you of some of the burdensome requirements and you're able to substitute in music, that's not what this bill is doing. It says everybody has to now take music to get the or CAD, whatever it is. So you go to all your other constituents and said, well, because this family thinks that music is important, everybody's got to take it in order to get the higher level. But that family that spoke with you they still have to do all of these things, including a foreign language. And then if you go to the lower levels, you're saying, well, there will allow you to substitute language for the music. And that's a mistake for all the reasons we've talked. There are lower requirements there, but frankly, foreign language is required to succeed, is required to get into college, and is required for success in the world. And as our colleague from Natrona County said, these things were thought out. And the request of your constituents when they say this, they're not reading the language of this bill. Go back and say, oh, by the way, you have to do that and everything else too.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a good debate. It was a good debate last time. And I appreciate the point. There certainly is trade-off. There's always considerations about time. But as my colleague from Albany County pointed out, you do have a substantial amount of hours available for elective purposes. Now, there's no way we're competing with math. We're not competing with science. You have to do those for 4 years. We have programs in place. We're talking about them frequently, about dual and concurrent enrollment to ensure that those very bright students are able to go to the university and take those courses. Nothing about this would stop that. In fact, nothing about this would preclude a student from going to college or university to take their art, to take their band class, to take their CTE courses. That, again, could be dual and concurrent enrollment. In fact, that's a great way to do this, and we're constantly moving forward in those areas as well. What this does is extend the rigor of the top two levels. Clearly, it adds additional requirements, and we're recognizing that those requirements are essential for excellence. And to say that fine and performing arts is not going to help you in any way in life, I don't think it really fully appreciates how important those skills are. I would submit that my colleague from Albany County would only be half the man he is today were it not for those singing lessons he took. Maybe a quarter. That's an essential point in his character. And I know that we heard in testimony that cognitive development through fine and performing arts is really a game changer for these students, that it adjusts their learning approach, it adjusts their understanding, and there are physical cognitive differences that can be demonstrated based on practices in those areas that affect their skills in mathematics and other areas, the kind of areas that we are emphasizing. We also heard an excellent testimony how important CTE-type courses are to students to get them engaged and make them understand hands-on what they're learning in the other courses. Again, bringing sort of a dose of reality to what is abstract and hypothetical in the other courses. That is a key to success, that type of understanding, and we're trying to make sure that that is an essential part of the success curriculum at the top two levels. To my good colleague from Natrona County who indicated that the business community was concerned about the language, that is absolutely the case. And yet, the business community through the Wyoming Business Alliance has indicated their strong support for this legislation because it does recognize that for the opportunity and the provisional opportunity programs, it's more important to make sure that the students are engaged and interested in something that might be a pathway to a career, which could include the language, but could also include that CTE component, that on balance for the state of Wyoming, the business community does recognize that this legislation is a step in the right direction. They believe that at the top two tiers, it increases rigor, which means that our candidates are going to be more successful, and they recognize that at the bottom two tiers, it expands the opportunities for these students to maintain their interest in the school, to get them graduated from school and performing well, because they're able to focus on things that truly interest them in their education. That recognition is the same recognition that I would encourage this body to see as they uphold House Bill 177. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I do rise in opposition to the bill. And my point is that particularly among your small, isolated schools, of which I've got a number in my district, and there's one over across the mountain from KC and one up in Park County, actually. And first of all, dual concurrent enrollment is not available in those schools, or if it is, it is extremely limited, and they are not courses of this nature. Second thing is, those small schools often offer courses on a two-year or a three-year rotating because their ability to offer them is based entirely on getting teachers with dual endorsements. If they don't have those, if they can't get one that's in the arts, that's in languages, or that one quits and they've got to go recruit another duly endorsed teacher, they're out of luck and the courses aren't there. And what happens? Those students are not they don't even have the ability to get into the higher level of scholarship. And do they succeed at college and community colleges? First of all, the dropout rate, in particularly those three of the smallest schools, is zero. Zero. They just don't have dropouts. Do they succeed when they go to community colleges, and doesn't matter where, or the university, or to MIT, or wherever they're going? They succeed just as well as your students from the big schools. But it's just a fact of life in tiny high schools. You don't have that broad array of courses being offered. So what you're doing is you're telling those students, you go down to the second, third level of the Hathaway because you simply cannot qualify for the upper two levels. I think that's wrong. I really do.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I think it's wrong that if you want to succeed in vocational training, that you can't get into the performance and higher levels. And I think this gives the person the ability to do that, if that's their interest. There may be some questions about whether or not we need some more flexibility in one area or the other, but I encourage everyone to move this bill along, and we can have those discussions and maybe make this a better piece of legislation if we need to. But it does give that opportunity for the honor and performance scholarships if you're interested in vocational education, and essentially you're pretty much locked out of it at this point in time.
Senator Dockstader.
Just briefly, Mr. Chairman, this Cheyenne constituent has no misunderstanding what the bill does. They're very much aware. They just simply want, and they know it's been there and it's been offered before, the fine and the performing arts to be considered as part of the Hathaway. That's simply what they're requesting. We brought this bill forward before. It's time to get it passed.
Senator Rothfuss, for your fourth time.
Just four more, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
So, to address the good senator from Casey very quickly, the original language in the bill, before it left the other chamber, included some exemptions and waiver language for small schools to address just exactly those concerns, as I believe we did out of the Senate a couple of years ago, to address those concerns when last expressed. And I'd certainly be willing to amend it back to the original language before it left the House to address those concerns. I think it's very well stated. The other side of it, though, is that it would be good to recognize areas where the schools are incapable of providing the level of education needed to meet this more rigorous standard. Because if we do have schools that can't do that, that's a real concern for us and should be for the overall body. We need to address that. The funding model indicates that they should be able to do all of these types of things. And if we have places out there that they're not able to, we need to fix that.
Are you ready for the question? Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises and do so, report with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 177, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Chair's in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed? House Bill 177 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Senators, I have to tell you that one of the great mysteries in the time that I've been here has finally been solved.
I've often pondered, where did the majority floor leader get such a melodious voice in all this time that I've been here? And the mystery's been solved. Senator Landon, would you take the chair, please?
Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 228. Would the reading clerk please read the House bill?
House Bill 228, Transfer of Federal Lands Study, sponsored by Representative Miller, an act relating to public lands. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks. No, Senator Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman. It was reassigned to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Meyer, and Perkins. No, Senator Hastert, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I move House Bill do pass. House Bill 228 do pass. I'll yield the floor to Senator Hicks to explain the bill.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, to expedite the proceedings of this body, I would just ask you to vote aye with a brief explanation of the bill. What this bill effectively does is establish a task force to study several aspects, one being including the potential transfer of federal lands into state ownership. I'm going to walk you through the bill, and we'll talk about what this does. It establishes a task force, and underneath that task force, there would be two members appointed from the Senate, two members appointed from the House, and five members appointed by the governor with representation in oil and gas, mining, county commission, recreation and travel, and agriculture. The charge of the task force the task force would also be staffed by LSO, university, and other state agencies as appropriate. If you flip over to page 3, what the task force is charged with studying is study the following items: the loss of revenue in the state of Wyoming associated with federal managed lands, the loss of property tax revenues from the state of Wyoming from federal land ownership, permitting delays associated with analysis on federal lands and the National Policy Act. And also, one of the things that we want to take a look at is some of these special federal designations and how they impact the economy, oil and gas, agriculture. And then we've got the catch-all category in there. Other federal actions or policies would be reviewed by the task force. It also has a provision in here for the Attorney General. With the Attorney General's provision, what we want to do is take a look at the legal history of transfer from federal ownership into state ownership. And there's some precedent to do that. And I want to go through that real quick while we're on that portion of the bill. Within the Enabling Act of every state, there's usually a provision that allows that transfer of federal ownership to state ownership, and then typically the states went to private ownership. And in some cases, under the Homestead Act, they went straight from federal ownership into private ownership. All this would do is have the Attorney General look at the legal history of other states that have done this. And I can tell you there's been several states that came in with the same enabling legislation that Wyoming did, that are almost entirely private lands now, including North Dakota and Ohio. So there would be a report by the Attorney General to the subcommittee looking at the legal strategy. Also on that, I can tell you right now, Utah passed a bill last year in 2012 to direct the state to start moving some of this federal estate into state ownership. Right now, Arizona passed a bill last year. It was vetoed by the governor with some concerns. That bill is back. New Mexico is looking at similar type of legislation. Idaho, Nevada. And there's also been resolutions of support passed in Arkansas and in South Carolina to look at this transfer of the federal domain back to the states and the private sector. The task force would basically make a recommendation at the end of the year based on the input and looking at these things that we talked about to the Ag Public Lands and Water Resources Committee. There is a appropriation on here. There would be $18,000 to the LSO for the payment of the committee members on the legislative side. There's also an appropriation for $12,000 to the governor's office to pay for the expense of those other members that he might appoint to this committee. What I really want to do, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, vote it up, vote it down. That's what the task force is assigned to do. But I want to point out one thing that I illustrate, I think, that talks about the importance of this committee. In 2012, it took 307 days to get a permit to drill on federal land in the state of Wyoming. It took 10 days in North Dakota because it's almost all private. It takes 14 days in Ohio. It takes 27 days in Colorado if you're drilling on private land. 307 days. There's a lot of lost revenue associated with that. One of the things this task force is chartered to look at is to look at these costs and how that affects the economy and our ability to continue to fund the government and the people of the state of Wyoming. With that, I know it's been long. I'm going to just stand for questions on this bill this time, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment asked to be read in at this time.
House Bill 228, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 5 after line 22.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 228. And members of the Senate, what this does is add $3,000 to the Office of Attorney General for accomplishing the purposes of this act, including out-of-state travel to the Council of State Governments West meetings. Mr. Chairman, we had testimony in the Senate Appropriations Committee by the chair of the CSG West, I believe, Environmental Committee. That'd be our colleague from KC, that they are looking at this as well. And he thought it made sense that the Attorney General have someone participate at these meetings and just to get some good information as to what they were doing and what they were trying to accomplish. So I'd ask the body to support this Standing Committee Amendment.
Comments or questions on the Standing Committee Amendment? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 228, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, something I'm going to ask the Senate to think about for potential second reading, if this bill gets that far, assuming it does, is that I've long thought that we ought to be able to structure, instead of going after them with legalities and whatnot, structure a purchase offer for particularly the federal minerals and the BLM lands, federal lands in the state, where we could preserve and enhance, actually, the federal's revenue stream because we could manage it better than they could, and get control of it and get out from under some of the federal restrictions that way, that if we could structure a deal that would make economic sense for both the state and the feds, we do have considerable resources, that might be a much more productive way, and think that maybe this bill could be broadened to at least look at that concept.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, there was quite a bit of discussion in committee along that lines, not only look at a purchase acquisition type of arrangement, but to also look at land swaps. I think we're all familiar with what we're trying to do with the inholdings of state lands and Teton Park. So I think that was at least part of the discussion, that this committee may look at a little broader scope other than just trying to use the federal court system or the legal system to try to regain control, but also look at potential land swaps and outright purchase or acquisition of either surface or subsurface.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for the sponsors. I was looking in here and trying to see if we need to incorporate maybe, or if there's an incorporation of the cost, if this task force will look at the cost to the state of managing federal lands, acquired federal lands.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I think that would be incorporated in part of that cost of any of the economic analysis to look at that. Those figures are readily available already. We can go to the Bureau or the Forest Service or whatever particular Bureau of Reclamation and get those costs to do that.
Questions, comment, questions having been called. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 228, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No.
No.
House Bill 228 is passed Committee of the Whole. Senator Hicks. Division having been called, we can go back to that. Ladies, gentlemen, all in favor of that House Bill 228, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. As I said, House Bill 228 has passed Committee of the Whole. Senator Hicks.
Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 235, if the reading clerk will read that in at this time.
House Bill 235, Firefighters License Plates, sponsored by Representative Green. An act relating to motor vehicles. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, and Landon. No, Senator Schiffer and Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a due pass on House Bill 235, Firefighters License Plates, and I ask the Chair to recognize the pioneering Senator from Cody to explain this fine bill. Mr. Chairman, I take that back. Would you have a standing committee number one amendment read in? I'd like to move that time.
House Bill 235, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, to page 2, line 9.
And Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to 235 and to explain the bill and the amendment. Do you recognize the Senator from Cody?
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. House Bill 235 goes into a program that we created in 2003 with a special firefighter license plate. One of the requirements back then was to have at least 1,000 plates sold, and we did do that. And I want to emphasize that this is not a new plate, and 100% of the proceeds, in fact, go to YDOT. What this bill does is go in at the bottom of page 1 for a firefighter retired from his department with at least 10 years of service. So what we're doing, we're just saying that somebody with 10 years of service on a fire department can also now purchase one of these plates. That, for instance, would bring me in. I had 23 years on Cody Fire, and I could buy one of these if I wanted to now. So that's all the bill does. It's pretty simple. It just recognizes firefighters out there with at least 10 years' experience that they, in fact, can buy one of these plates. That's all the bill does. Thank you.
We're on the amendment. Question on the amendment. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 235, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We're back on the bill. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, and I'm sorry to hold this up here, but I'm trying to figure out exactly what the point of this license plate is. When this... firefighter's license plate was originally introduced. The rationale for this thing was the idea if there's some sort of emergency or catastrophe or something like that, that a firefighter's license plate would be a signal to somebody that here's a trained firefighter, you can let them through. And then a year or two later, we did the same thing with the EMT license plate. Again, it was supposed to be the recognition that this is somebody who's specially trained, and so that somebody that could be called on in case they're needed. Now it's a retired firefighter. Now this could be somebody who's 75 years old and maybe was a firefighter 20 years ago. I mean, the idea here is not recognition of somebody could be useful in a catastrophe. It's basically, hey, this guy was once a firefighter. Okay, fine. Why not just get a bumper sticker? I mean, the idea behind a license plate is to recognize a car and identify the car, frankly, for the police. By the way, I don't like the bill.
Yeah.
Senator Burns, I have absolutely no experience with expertise on these license plates, so I'm going to defer to Senator Landon.
Well, for the reason that my friend from Sheridan brought up is one of the reasons I kind of like this bill. I just didn't have time enough in committee to convince my two chairmen that it was really a pretty good little bill. And, you know, here's what I do like. We did set this up with the idea in mind that in a situation where we've got a tragedy, a wreck on the road, those sorts of things, that these license plates would be an identifier. And the fact is, I think this could be useful. If you've got somebody who has that training in their background and has the ability for things like crowd control, CPR, all the things that these firefighters have been trained for, you don't lose that overnight. And are there going to be a lot of these retired firefighters use this license plate? No. There's not a lot of firefighters now who use this plate. I think we've got about 1,000 plates out there, maybe 5,000 firefighters. There's a lot of these firefighters, they don't want to be identified as a firefighter when they're on their weekend off. But in the summer, I hang out with a couple of guys who are recently retired from fire departments, and you know what? They'd be very helpful at a scene. You would want to wave them through, and they would be helpful. And if they want to hang on to their plate upon retirement or whatever, and the chief signs off on it, I don't see any problem with it. I think it's a good bill. Thank you, Chairman.
Senator Coe.
Very briefly, Mr. Chairman. This is really intended. This program was created to recognize. You know, now remember that probably 85 to 90% of the people that fight fire in Wyoming are volunteers. And I can tell you that when I was on for 23 years, we didn't rely on a license plate so people would know who we were and we were going someplace. We had red lights on our cars, and we had all kinds of different stuff we did. This is really to recognize the service that these people provide and have provided over the years. I think it's a good little bill. It just brings in, if you've got 10 years' experience, you can qualify for this. I'd ask that you support the bill.
You ready for the question? Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatiron's motion that House Bill 235... All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 235, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The chair is in doubt whether Senator Burns really means it or not, Senator Burns. House Bill 235 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
You got a little flat today. Mr. Chairman, I would move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion failed. carried. Senator President Ross.
The reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 58 do pass. House Bill 129 do pass. House Bill 132 do pass amended. House Bill 203 do pass amended. House Bill 217 do pass amended. House Bill 234 do pass. House Bill 237 do pass. House Bill 259 do pass. House Bill 177 do pass amended. House Bill 228 do pass amended. And House Bill 235 do pass amended. Senator Hicks, chairman.
What the heck? Senator Hicks, get out of the bathroom.
Hurry up, hurry up.
Take your offices.
I move for adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion's carried and the report has been adopted. What else do I have now? Messages from the House. All right, let's see.
February the 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 412, Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 110, Registration Fees, Trailers with Living Quarters. Ayes 13, noes 34, excused 4. February the 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 413, Committee of the Whole, indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 135, Assisted Living Facilities Regulations. Ayes 55, noes 45. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. What did I say?
55.
Oh, ayes 15, noes 45. That'll take care of that. February 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 414. Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 34, Law Enforcement Academy Director's Duties. Ayes 23, noes 35, excused 2. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Okay, signing an enrolled act.
Oh, okay.
House Enrolled Act 60 being original House Bill 72.
House Enrolled Act number 60 being original House Bill 72, an act relating to the Teacher Accountability Act of 2011.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 60 being original House Bill 72. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 61 being original House Bill 81.
House Bill House Enrolled Act number 61 being original House Bill 81. An act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 61 being original House Bill 81. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 45 being original House Bill 44.
House Enrolled Act number 45 being original... Oh, Senate Enrolled Act Number 45 being Original Senate File 44, and Act relating to the Military Department.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 45 being Original Senate File 44. I've so signed. And Senate Enrolled Act 46 being Original Senate File 46.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 46 being Original Senate File 46, and Act relating to domestic relations.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 46 being Original Senate File 46. I have so signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that that we stand adjourned. I was thinking another word, but we'll stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Friday, February 22nd, tomorrow.
Announcements, Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow upon the noon recess to look at interim topics. And then on Monday, the Select Water Committee will meet upon the noon recess to handle things we have to do with Select Water.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 2 appropriations will meet in 10 minutes and 204 to discuss interim topics. And we'll also be meeting Monday morning, 8 a.m. in room S13 to conduct hearings on the governor's appointments of 2 to the Retirement Board, System Board, 1 to School Facilities Commission, the NI Director, and the ETS Director.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in the House Labor Committee Room, H-17, to discuss joint interim topics with our counterpart committee from the House.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet at noon recess, lunch recess, I should say, with our counterparts in the House in the House Transportation Room tomorrow, just after noon recess.
Senator Case.
A reminder, Mr. President, previously announced, but your Select Committee on Tribal Relations is still going to meet tonight to discuss interim. I don't think it'll take very long. We're going to meet in the S-19.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think everybody got the Race for the Cure application on their desks, and I guess since I've collected a few checks already, I'm going to go ahead and collect them. If anybody wants to fill out the form or just write a check, I'll make sure they get turned in.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, could the members of the Senate TRW committee please meet me at my desk immediately upon adjournment? That's Senator Driscoll, Senator Christensen, Senator Kraft, and Senator Barnard, because otherwise I didn't think they were paying attention.
Right. Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet tomorrow, Friday, February 22nd, 15 minutes after the noon recess, to take up confirmation hearings. We'll have 2 for the Wyoming Business Council, the Director of DEQ, 1 Oil and Gas Commission members, and 1 Energy Resource Council members. And the committees will also meet Monday, 15 minutes after the noon recess, to take up further nominations for confirmation hearings.
Any further announcements? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried, and the Senate stands adjourned until 10 a.m. Friday, February 22nd.